Hey, hi, hello. Welcome to Word on the Street. Today the word on the street is dialects. Where do they come from? What makes them different? Is it genetic? Phonetic? I just don't get it. The word on the street is that linguistics is neat. Growing up, I remember hearing a lot about one particular speech difference in the way my dad talks. He was born in Oklahoma and moved all over the U.S. during his childhood, and that sometimes reflects in his speech. The way I've heard about most is that when he says words with an e, epsilon sound, he pronounces it more with an I. Pen becomes pin, and my mom's name goes from Wendy to Windy. He used to work with university students before he retired, and some of them went months, not knowing quite sure whether my mom's name was Wendy or Windy. It's a funny story to tell, but it does raise some interesting questions. What exactly is going on with that? I can assume it has something to do with him not growing up in Manitoba, but I've been exposed to it through him, so why don't I mix up pin and pen? To tackle that first question, I want to look at the way we learn dialect through the lens of my dad. What he does with the e and I sounds is something very common called the pin-pen merger. A merger is when a sound or phoneme is changed into dialect or language to be the same as another phoneme. The pin-pen merger is when e becomes I, but it's more specific than that. I don't have the pin-pen merger, but if I say the word women, like plural woman, it sounds more like women. This is because the pin-pen merger is looked at in a specific environment. Linguists look at the pin-pen merger in stressed syllables, and to be qualified as the merger, that change has to be made in the stressed syllable, which is why when changing the men to min in women doesn't count, because it's not the emphasized syllable. This merger is found commonly in Southern America, which is where my dad was born, but he didn't fully grow up there. My dad worked for Shell Oil, a job that took the family all over. And even though he mainly grew up in the southern states, he's been living in Manitoba since the 1970s. All that change in environment makes me wonder more about how dialects are learned. What made the pin-pen merger stick compared to other things he may have been exposed to, especially since he's been away from those southern states for so long? J.K. Chambers did a very interesting observational study in the late 1990s where he visited Canadian families who had moved to the UK and interviewed them about their dialectal differences. He noted that their dialect changes were much more permanent than performative. The families mentioned that they sounded more English with local peers, but Chambers, who speaks with an accent similar to the one they would have known in Canada, noted that even speaking casually with him, they were speaking more of the local dialect. Dialect learning or acquisition must be a lot easier and unconscious than language learning. However, the interviews Chambers conducted did show that the younger children's dialects were more similar to the local English, suggesting that age does play a part in dialect acquisition. A study in Japan in 1958 showed consistent evidence that people younger than 7 can fully acquire new dialects, but people over 14 will most likely never fully acquire a new dialect in their language. And this timeline coincides fairly well with the time my dad spent growing up in the southern U.S. J.K. Chambers' interviews with the Canadian families, as well as other studies referenced in his article Dialect Acquisition, suggest varying levels of difficulty in dialect acquisition. Changes in vocabulary, like saying chips instead of French fries, seem to happen within the first couple years after being exposed to this new dialect. While it isn't always easy to replace vocabulary, these differences are very easy to notice in speech, unlike some other aspects of dialect. It's easier to tell if someone is saying boot instead of trunk than if they're saying ah or aw. And in these phonetic or sound changes, there also seem to be varying levels of complexity, and more complex sounds and changes take longer to implement, if they're implemented at all. Arvilla Payne's study of complex sound systems in Philadelphia led to a few ideas for what makes a complex sound feature. One requirement for a simpler sound change that the pin-pen merger does not meet is having no phoneme split, which, here's a hint, is the opposite of a merger. Having to separate the two sounds I and the epsilon make unlearning that dialect feature complex. It also doesn't help that there's a change in environment for this merger, which is another criteria for a complex phonetic change. You may remember me talking earlier about how the pin-pen merger isn't constant, but just in the specific environment of the stressed syllable, which contributes to its complexity. Overall, it makes sense now that my dad would still have this dialect feature, understanding that it seems to be a complex sound change, and that he was likely exposed to it for most of his young life, with the exception of a few years spent in Calgary. But this doesn't explain now why I don't have it. I was definitely exposed to the pin-pen merger through my dad before I was 7, so it would make sense that I would have the pin-pen merger as part of my dialect, right? The research venturing to answer this question has some really fascinating ideas. Before going into them, I would like to say that a lot of the evidence behind these ideas is anecdotal. It's based on stories. And while that doesn't mean it isn't true, that is just something to be aware of as people are working to find more concrete evidence for these theories. My lack of the pin-pen merger can probably be explained by something called the Ethan experience. Ethan was a child born and raised in Toronto to two immigrant parents who spoke English as a second language and, in their own words, had medium to strong accents. Despite their accents, Ethan never showed any signs of accent features in his speech. Even as a preschool-aged child, there weren't even isolated incidents of him saying a word with his parents' accent. This was something observed in lots of kids of similar situations to Ethan, and the conclusion reached was that the children cannot hear the accent difference. There's a part of the brain that filters out the accent, making it easier for the child to learn the local dialect. The children being looked at didn't even know their parents had an accent. And when people found that out, they went to find out when kids started noticing their parents' accents, and it was around puberty. Which, interestingly enough, coincides very closely with the findings from the Japanese study, which said that people cannot fully acquire a new dialect past the age of 14. The young brain is so incredibly hardwired for acquiring language that this filter even seems to extend past accent and dialect. Leslie Milroy spoke to a man from Michigan who thought he was a monolingual English speaker, but found out later that his grandmother, with whom he vividly remembered conversing with as a child, could only speak Hungarian. Wowzeroosa, dudesapalooza. While it isn't empirical evidence, I can say that I don't remember actually noticing my dad saying pin instead of pen or windy instead of Wendy until I was older and I was listening for it. And then it was because I'd heard other people mentioning it. And when I look at it that way, the Ethan experience seems to be a pretty good explanation for why I don't have the pin-pen merger. I may have technically been exposed to it, but during that period of my life where I was learning language and acquiring my Manitoban dialect, I could not hear the pin-pen merger. And that is really cool. That was really fun. Thank you for taking the time to learn about dialect with me. I had a great time learning about where my dad's dialect came from and why it stuck around this long, but why I don't have it. It was really cool. Thanks for listening. And keep your ears open for the word on the street.